We're going to spend the rest of our time today talking about, well, time. Joining me here in Studio 3 to help us do that is Brian Green, professor of physics and mathematics at Columbia University. His new book is called Until the End of Time: Mind, Matter, and Our Search for Meaning in an Evolving Universe. He's in town for a talk tonight at Harvard University in Science Center Hall B at 7 p.m. You can find more about that on our website, radioboston.org. Brian Green, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much.
And listeners, if you have a question for Brian Green, we'd love to hear from you. Any thoughts or questions about science or science education? You can give us a ring at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And as always, you can tweet at us at Radio Boston. Brian, I got to say, sometimes these types of sciencey books that contemplate the end of the universe can leave me feeling a bit depressed, like nothing matters, you know, it's all going to end anyway. So how do you go about sort of finding meaning in a universe that you predict will someday not only end for each one of us individually, but perhaps all of life will be gone?
Well, that really is the theme of the entire book. and it's a great question and one that motivated a lot of thinking by many people over a great period of time. My own take on it is that when you recognize that not only are we individuals going to die, and not only is everything that we know about in the world ultimately going to dissolve into particles that waft through the void, it focuses your attention on the moment. It focuses on the things that are happening now, and it makes you recognize that you need to manufacture your own meaning. You have to find your own purpose, and looking out to the cosmos to find the ultimate answer is the wrong direction. Ultimately, it's a spiritual, personal journey that takes place within the rigorous unfolding of the cosmos.
So before you waft into the void, get to living, right?
That's exactly right.
Your book also delves into some pretty deep science. You explain entropy, for example. And overall, though, I'd say it's actually pretty accessible, though, to non-science majors. And I'm curious how you think about that balance. I mean, you want to be true to the science. You don't want to oversimplify things, but you also want to bring in a mainstream audience. How do you walk that line?
Well, that is the art of writing these kinds of books, and different authors draw the line in different places. My own view is I want to really give a true sense of the underlying science, not turn it into a cartoon. But at the same time, it has to be about wonder. It has to be about excitement at understanding how the universe works. So there's no math, of course, in Until the End of Time. But I translate the real rigorous ideas of the mathematics into accessible language. So you get a sense of how the universe began. You get a sense of where life came from. You get a sense of the nature of consciousness. And you pivot with me toward a look into the very far future. And you gain an understanding of where we are all headed.
We're talking about science, time with Professor Brian Green. And for that matter, if you want to ask him about the meaning of life, you can do that too. The number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK if you'd like to join our conversation. On the subject of time, Brian, you know, you have this sort of contradiction in a way in your book that I find interesting. You say on the one hand, it's something that we can measure very precisely down to the second or millisecond or nanosecond. And it's also something we don't fully understand. Can you explain that tension?
Yeah, that's weird, right? I mean, usually you think that if you can measure something with fantastic precision, you must understand what it is that you are measuring. But for a very long time, we've known that we don't have a full understanding of what time actually is. We don't understand if it's a fundamental quality of existence. We don't understand if it's something that the human mind imposes on the external world to organize our perceptions. Or is it somehow fundamentally stitched into the tapestry of reality? And these are questions that we struggle with today. String theory, my own field of research, seems to suggest that time may be emergent in the sense that there may be realms of reality where the very nature of time, the very notion of time, may not apply.
You mentioned the word spiritual earlier.
Yeah.
That piqued my interest. Explain that a little bit more. I mean, where does spirituality fit into science?
Good.
Those two sometimes seem to be at odds with
each other. Yeah, they often are described as at odds with each other. But when you recognize that science is about giving us an understanding of the external world, we want to understand the particles that make up matter. We want to understand how matter comes together and yields cells and living beings and planets and stars. We want to understand the expansion of space. All of that is objective qualities of the external world that science is well equipped to give us insight into. But there's another part of reality, which is the inner part of reality, the experience of reality, and the journey to understand our own inner world, our own conscious experience, how we take in the external world. For many, that is a spiritual journey, because you are understanding aspects of the world that are not accessible to an objective external observation. Rather, they are deeply personal. And for many, that journey involves things that science often stays away from. Religious undertakings, spiritual quests, and these kinds of parts of reality I consider equally vital to a full understanding of what it means to be human.
All right. Let's take a call while we're at it. You've opened up a lot of interesting subjects here, so I want to give folks a chance to weigh in. Jane is in Quincy. Go ahead, Jane.
Hello, Brian Green. I've read or heard about you for years. I'm 86. I teach meditation and Qigong, and I'm also very interested in Wu Wei and also consciousness beyond life. And so your book, I guess it's new, would be an interesting one to read. And I'm also interested in that 30-year-old photograph that they took from outer space, the Voyager 1, of the little blue dot, or the pale blue dot, way back 30 years ago. And is there anything about those particular things of the cosmos and the microcosm in your book?
Well, yeah, I wish perhaps you can come to my talk tonight. You mentioned that it's at Harvard at the Science Center at 7 p.m. because I will begin that discussion tonight with the pale blue dot photograph where we see little planet Earth embedded in the grander expanse of space with Saturn in the foreground. Because to me, and perhaps to you as well, that image provides perspective like none other on how we fit into the grand expanse of space. And the point of my book and the point of the discussion tonight is to give a sense of how we fit into the expanse of time. So in many ways, my book and the discussion tonight is an extension of that pale blue dot photograph.
So Jane and Quincy, great question there. You've sort of set the table for tonight's event. And if you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Brian, I was hoping that you could read an excerpt of your book for us while we have you, because there's some sort of abstract concepts in there, but you've also got some fun personal anecdotes, and this is one that caught my eye. So this is on page 310, and you're describing preparing for a safari in South Africa. It's supposed to be a walking safari, but you're a little bit nervous. You're thinking about backing out, and your guide is warning people not to do anything dumb, like try to outrun a lion. And then this happens. Would you pick it up from there?
Absolutely. Just then, I glanced down at the sleeve of my loose-fitting shirt, identifying precisely what was clinging to my cuff was of little concern. To me, it was a tarantula, and it was making its way upward. I freaked. My arm flew back and forth, knocking glasses off the breakfast table. I jumped from my chair, and plates that had survived my initial flailing were now flailing too. In the mayhem, the tarantula, or whatever creepy thing it actually was, detached. By the time I regained composure, the little nickel-sized creature was on the ground, slowly crawling away. "Ah," the guide said, smiling when all had settled down, "the universe has spoken for our physicist friend. You travel in the Jeep." And I did. The universe had not spoken for me. The attack was random and its timing blind chance. Were I a disinterested party, I would offer my standard riposte, noted earlier, that in the absence of such an event, there would be no surprise that such a coincidence had not happened. But the truth is, for a brief moment, the embarrassing episode felt significant.
All right. I love this moment, Brian, because it's, first of all, it's a, sort of a funny scene that you paint. But I think it's a moment that a lot of people can relate to as they read, right? I mean, even if you accept the scientific premise that this was random chance, as you put it, there was nothing, the universe was not speaking to you, it does feel significant. In fact, as you had confessed, you actually were thinking about backing out and maybe were more comfortable in the Jeep, and this event got you to where you maybe should have been all along. I mean, how do you wrestle with those things?
Well, I look at the human species as a pattern-seeking species. The reason that we have survived is we're really good at looking out at the world and finding patterns that allow us to figure out what's going to happen next, right? But we're so good at it and so primed to seek out pattern that sometimes we find patterns that really are not significant at all. And this is an example of that. right? It felt to me that the universe was shaking its finger at me and saying, Brian, do not go out on that safari on foot. Something bad is going to happen. And I took it in that way, and I didn't go on foot. But of course, that's nonsense, right? That's not how the world works. The universe doesn't care about what I'm going to do or if I survive or not. And so as we go about the world, we have to use our judgment to figure out what patterns are actually giving us insight into the nature of reality and what patterns just happen to happen because random events occur in the world.
We're chatting with physicist Brian Greene about his new book, Until the End of Time, Mind, Matter, and Our Search for Meaning in an Evolving Universe. If you'd like to jump in, the number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Brian, I do want to pivot a little bit to another subject that I know is important to you, which is science education.
Yeah.
And perhaps you'll talk about that more tonight. But, you know, you co-founded the World Science Festival in 2008. So why did you do that, first of all? And why do you think it is so important for science to remain at the center of our education today?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the future and every opportunity we have and every challenge we face has science at its core. I mean, the obvious ones that we all know about are climate change, but the opportunities with space travel, genetic engineering, personalized medicine. I mean, it's an amazing place that we're sitting at right now. And you have to have leaders that have an understanding of science in order that the decisions made are sensible and they're ultimately democratic. And so we have to have the next generation excited about science. And the thing is, if you look at kids, they're all excited about science when they're really little. They smash things together. They pull things apart. They're little scientists trying to figure out the nature of the world around them.
So what happens then?
What happens is, well, look, there are some really good teachers, so don't take a generalization the wrong way. But in general, our educational system does not inspire kids to keep up that deep interest in science. We're so focused on assessment, on testing kids. I mean, my kids are in middle school and high school now, and all they do is learn their science in order to take Tuesday's quiz or Wednesday's exam. And after it's over, they forget about the material because they've accomplished what they needed to do. That is tragic. That is utterly tragic. We need to present the ideas of science in a way that it touches kids and adults in a deep way and inspires them to want to understand their world. And that is something that, for instance, I try to do in my books. It's why we started this World Science Festival that you mentioned. And it's my hope that the educational system will ultimately align itself with that kind of goal.
Well, you've given me more questions to think about, but I do want to give the callers a chance to weigh in, too. John is in Bridgewater. Go ahead, John.
And that is something that, for instance, I've tried.
John, are you there? Go ahead.
Okay.
John, what's your question?
Hello? Well, human beings tend to conceptualize time in terms of their own life expectancy. So we think 80 years is a long time, whereas in the scheme of the universe, it's totally insignificant. So we have this concept that's all sort of selfishly oriented to our own life expectancy.
Yeah, it's a good point, John. Thanks for the ring. For my three-year-old, you know, an hour is a long time, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's all relative.
Absolutely. Now, look, you know, the human lifespan is the most vital time scale that we experience as individuals, but the caller's absolutely right. When we think about time in the universe, that is a blink of an eye. And in my book and in tonight's discussion, I will take the audience from now 10 to the 100 years into the future. I mean, that is an enormous time scale. And yet, the beauty of science is using mathematics, we can make some fairly confident predictions of what's going to transpire between now and 1 billion years from now and 100 billion years from now and a Google of years from now, which is what 10 to the 100 is. So you're absolutely right. On those scales, the human lifespan is less than a blink of an eye.
Tumbling, when you put it that
way. It is.
In just the moments we have left, Brian, I mean, what are you working on next? I mean, what excites you that might also be infectious for others?
Well, actually, it's the conversation we're talking about. My research right now is focused on time, trying to figure out where it comes from and if we can use our cutting-edge theories, our unified theories like string theory, to get a deeper understanding of where time itself comes from.
That's Brian Greene. He's a professor of physics and mathematics at Columbia University. His new book is called Until the End of Time, Mind, Matter, and Our Search for Meaning in an Evolving Universe. He's in town for a talk tonight at Harvard. As he said, he'll be in Science Center Hall B at 7 p.m. You can find more details about that at radioboston.org. Brian, thanks so much for taking time to stop in with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.